I'm going to go right into this paper because of the time. And first of all, I want to state that this paper actually will be focusing on one time word used in the Old Testament, the Hebrew olam, which occurs 440 times. The Aramaic equivalent, alam, appears 20 times in Daniel and Ezra. In this study, four translations in widespread use today, the New American Standard Version, the New International Version, the New King James Version, and the New Revised Standard Version will be examined to see how they render olam in various passages. The question is, how should olam be translated? The standard meaning students of Hebrew learn for the word is eternity. Weingreen, Siow, and Lamden give this translation in the vocabulary section of their grammars, while Mansour provides the interpretation forever. Students early become accustomed to rendering olam in the different constructions in which it is found in their grammar exercises and in the Hebrew Bible as eternity, or eternal, or everlasting, or forever. Indeed, this is the way olam in its several formations and numerous occurrences in the Old Testament usually is translated by the New American Standard, the NIV, the New King James, and the New RSV. But is the basic meaning of olam eternity, everlastingness, everlasting, forever? According to Webster's dictionary, eternity is the fact, condition, or quality of being eternal. And eternal means without beginning or end. Technically speaking, then, the words eternity and eternal should only be used of God, for God alone is without beginning or end. Yet the word has also taken on a broader significance in common English usage, and this is also reflected in Webster, who gives the additional meanings existing through all time, everlasting, timeless. Everlasting, according to Webster, means lasting forever, eternal, while forever is defined as throughout eternity, endlessly, for always. These words, therefore, in their primary dominant significance, the meanings which first come to mind when people read or hear them, convey the idea of limitless time, of time without end. But is the basic meaning of olam this? Concerning the etymology of olam, the majority of scholars fall into one of two groups. The first group traces the word back to the verbal root ayin lamed mem. Included in this group are William Gazanius, C. von Aureli, whose influential work on time and eternity in the Old Testament, Die Hebräischen Synonyme der Zeit und Ewigkeit genetisch und sprachvergleichend dargestellt, was published in 1871. Also included is E. Koenig and many others. It is explained that, according to Arabic and Ugaritic evidence, there were in early Semitic two separate words, Ryan LM and Ayin LM. When I use Ayin LM, that's giving the transliteration of the Semitic equivalent of Hebrew Ayin Lamed Mem. However, with the Ryan and Ayin coalescing in biblical Hebrew and Aramaic, both early roots are represented in the Hebrew Bible by the one form Ayin Lamed Mem. Thus, an Ayin Lamed Mem 1 and an Ayin Lamed Mem 2 are proposed, the first being connected with the original Ayin LM and meaning to hide, conceal, or be hidden. Ayin Lamed Mem 2 is connected with the original Ryan LM. From this root come the Hebrew words Elam, young man, Alma, young woman, and Alumim, youth, youthful vigor. Concerning the etymology of olam, scholars in the first group relate this word to Ayin Lamed Mem 1, and thus define olam as hidden time, veiled time, unknown time. The idea is that olam indicates time so far in the past and or so far in the future that its limit is hidden to the speaker. It is beyond his perception, experience, or memory. While such a proposal seems attractive, Ernst Jene, in his lengthy, thorough, and valuable article, Das Wort Olam im Alten Testament, argues against it. As he explains, according to this etymology, olam would go back to the earlier form alam, that is, to a katal form. However, this katal form, yeni states, is not found as a nominal pattern in Hebrew. Yet yeni himself discusses two other Hebrew nouns which show the katal pattern: chotham, seal, signet ring, and otsar, treasure, store, treasury, storehouse. Yeni dismisses chotham as an Egyptian loan word, and otsar as coming not from a root aleph tsadi resh, to lay up, store up, but probably from the root wow tsadi resh. Yeni's opinions, though, are questionable, and chotham and otsar are not so easily dismissed. They may be seen as evidence for a katal pattern in Hebrew along with olam. Concerning the etymology of olam, the second group of scholars, including P. Jensen and Wheeler Robinson, favors relating the word to the Akkadian olam, remote, distant, ulanum, there, from there, outside, beyond, before. Olam was used as a time word most often for the distant past, but also for the distant future. Ulanum was used predominantly to indicate temporal distance. Yeni prefers this Akkadian etymology of olam. At the same time, he rules out a direct identification with the Akkadian words because of the vocalization of the Aramaic alam, the equivalent of Hebrew olam. Yeni admits there was another problem with the Akkadian connection. The double L in olam and ulanum, compared to the single L or lamed in Hebrew olam and Aramaic alam. Based on the available evidence, an etymology deriving olam from the root ayin lamed mem 1 seems preferable, though not certain. Working with this etymology, one still has questions concerning the meaning of olam. Does hidden time equal eternity, everlastingness, or does it signify something else? Further, there is always the question of whether the etymological meaning of olam was the same as the meaning of the word as it is used in biblical Hebrew. That is, was there a change in meaning of olam from the time it was first used to the time it appears in the Hebrew Bible? A brief survey of selected Semitic languages shows that in Ugaritic, the word ayin lm, related to Hebrew olam, is used with regard to the gods Ael and Baal. In these contexts, ayin lm may have the significance of everlastingness. However, the same word is also used in connection with human slaves, for example, in the Kirta epic, not in the sense of everlastingness, but rather of perpetuity, perpetual slaves. In Arabic, several verb forms developing from ayin lm are related to the idea of knowing. Nouns related to this root include knowledge, learning, information, sign, token, mark. As John Thompson concludes, the time sense of Hebrew olam apparently is not developed in the Arabic ayin lm. In a number of Phoenician inscriptions, ayin lamed mem can mean eternity, everlastingness. In the Moabite Mesha inscription, ayin lamed mem in line 7 probably carries the sense of forever. However, in line 10, ayin lamed mem is used with the preposition from, in the sense of from of old, a phrase used to describe the length of time the people of the tribe of Gad had occupied the land of Ataroth, a city located about 7 miles from the northeastern shore of the Dead Sea. Since the tribe Gad and Reuben occupied this region about 1406 BC, according to Numbers 32, and the Mesha inscription dates to about 850 BC, ayin lamed mem is used for a time period of roughly 550 years. Finally, in several Elephantine papyri written in Aramaic and dating to the 5th century BC, ayin lamed mem appears with the preposition ayin dalet in a phrase meaning forever. Although reviewing how ayin lm and ayin lamed mem are used in other Semitic languages sheds light on a study of Hebrew olam, this in itself is not decisive, of course, for understanding the word as used in the Old Testament. One general impression derived from such a review is that while ayin lm or ayin lamed mem was frequently used to indicate eternity or the concept of forever, in certain contexts, it did not express everlastingness. The idea common to all the contexts was that of a very long time, but of varying lengths. In the Septuagint, biblical olam is usually rendered by ion, often by ionius. According to Bauer Arndt Gingrich, ion has various meanings, including very long time, long past, earliest times, eternity, age, and used in a negative phrase, never, not at all, never again. For ionius, Bauer Arndt Gingrich give the meaning eternal, that is, without beginning or without end, or both together. An examination of etymology, extra-biblical Semitic evidence, and translations in the Septuagint is helpful for determining the meaning of biblical olam. This examination complements or supplements that which is decisive or most important for understanding the word, namely, seeing how it is actually used in the Bible. And so what I want to do is I just wanted to clear the decks, get out the Hebrew Bible, get out Lazowski, look up all the references in Lazowski, and see how olam is used in the Old Testament. By way of introduction to the biblical evidence, this summary can be given. Olam, or sometimes it's written defectively. In other words, with the holam defectively written, that occurs 23 times. But olam, except for one instance, always appears with a preposition, la, two or four, ath, to, up to, min, or simply the name, from, as an adverbial accusative or temporal adverb, as Walt Kean O'Connor would put it, or as the word in the absolute state in a construct chain. The one exception, olam occurring as a definite direct object, appears in Ecclesiastes 3:11, which reads, he, namely God, put eth ha olam in their, namely men's, heart. How olam is used in Isaiah 64:4 is uncertain due to textual corruption. Olam appears 15 times with the definite article, once with a suffix, Ecclesiastes 12:5, and 12 times as a plural. Aramaic olam occurs in Daniel and Ezra with a preposition, lamed, ath, and min, as an adverbial accusative, Daniel 4:31, the first occurrence, or as the word in the absolute state in a construct chain. The first occurrence in Daniel 4:31 could also be understood that way, as the first word, as the word in the absolute state in a construct chain. It is plural 9 times with the article or determinate 8 times. The great majority of Bible verses containing olam fall into one of two categories. The first, those in which olam is used to indicate time past, and the second, future time. Some verses in which olam appears twice have both senses. Concerning verses in the first category, the past time sense, these are far less numerous than the verses in the second category. Nevertheless, they show that olam was used to indicate past time of varying lengths. In connection with Yahweh, olam can indicate limitless past time, eternity in that sense. Psalm 25, verse 6. Yahweh, your mercy and grace, they have been me'olam. In all the versions, the NASB, the New American Standard, the NIV, the New King James, and the New RSV, all have from of old. In other verses, olam is used for the far distant past, but not the limitless past, which is without beginning. There is a reference to those long dead in Yahweh's speech against Tyre in Ezekiel 26, verse 20. I shall bring you down with those who go down to the pits, to the people of Olam, and I shall make you dwell in the lower parts of the earth. The New American Standard has the people of old, NIV, the people of long ago, the New King James, the people of old, the New RSV, the people of long ago. Koheleth states in the first chapter of his book, verse 10, in answer to the question if there is anything new, already it has been la'olamim. The New American Standard has existed for ages. The New International, here already. The New King James, already been in ancient times. The New RSV, already been in the ages. Genesis 6 speaks about mighty men who lived on the earth before the flood. They were me'olam. And all the versions, all four have for that Hebrew phrase, of old. Job 22:15 refers to the path of wicked of the wicked who have existed since the fall into sin. Will you keep the path of Olam, which wicked men have trod? The New American Standard, Ancient Path, NIV, Old Path, New King James, Old Way, New RSV, Old Way. Other verses use Olam to indicate time long in the past, but not as distant as the reference points in the verses just cited. For example, Jeremiah 5:15 describes Babylonia as a nation me'olam. All four translations render this phrase as an ancient nation. Joshua tells the Israelites during a covenant renewal ceremony after the conquest, your fathers dwelt on the other side of the river, the Euphrates, me'olam, Joshua 24:2. The New American Standard from Ancient Times, NIV, Long Ago, New King James, and Old Times, New RSV, Long Ago. Micah asked Yahweh to permit Israel to feed in Bashan and Gilead as in days of Olam, chapter 7:14. This could be a reference to the conquest which took place under Moses over 600 years before Micah wrote, or to the Davidic and Solomonic Empire, less than 300 years before Micah's ministry. The New American Standard has days of old, NIV days long ago, New King James days of old, New RSV days of old. Proverbs 22 verse 28 says, do not move the boundary of Olam, which your fathers set. And here the translations have either ancient boundary or ancient landmark. Solomon is probably the author of this proverb. Compare Proverbs 10 verse 1. And he may have been speaking about a boundary set in the days of Joshua after the conquest, less than 500 years before Solomon's reign. Malachi foretold the first coming and work of the Messiah, promising his hearers, then the offering of Judah and Jerusalem will be pleasing to Yahweh as in days of Olam and as in former years. The days of Olam may be a reference to the days of David, Solomon, and the good kings of the southern kingdom, including the last one, Josiah. Thus, the time period referred to was anywhere from about 550 years to 160 years before Malachi wrote. The New American Standard, days of old, New King James, New RSV, the same, the NIV, days gone by. God promised the people through Amos that he would raise up the ruined house of David and rebuild it as in days of Olam, chapter 9:11. Clearly, this is a reference to the glory years of David and Solomon, less than 300 years before Amos's prophetic ministry. The New International has, as it used to be, the other three have, days of old. Finally, Jeremiah spoke to people in the Jerusalem temple. The prophets who were before me and before you, min ha'olam, prophesied to many lands and against great kingdoms of war and of calamity and of pestilence, chapter 28, verse 8. Jeremiah could have been thinking as far back as Moses, but a definite possibility is that he was also thinking about Isaiah, who died less than 100 years before Jeremiah began his prophetic ministry. The New American Standard, Ancient Times, also the RSV, New RSV, the NIV, Early Times, New King James of old. In summary, the verses examined show that Olam, when used to refer to past time, indicated a long time before the present situation. The length of time involved, however, varied according to context, from a few centuries or less in the past to the limitless past. Eternity, the limitless past, is not the basic meaning of Olam, judging from these passages. Rather, it is a specialized meaning. I have no quarrel with the renderings of the versions. They all show a sensitivity to the various nuances inherent in Olam. The second major group of verses, those in which Olam is used to refer to time in the future, is by far the larger group. Olam in many of these verses does signify the limitless future, eternity, everlastingness. For example, God says to Moses in Exodus 3:15, Yahweh, this is my name, La'olam. In Exodus 15:18, Moses proclaims, Yahweh will reign, La'olam wa'ayev. In Deuteronomy 32:40, God says about himself through Moses, I live La'olam. Isaiah 40, verse 8 states, "The word of our God stands le'olam." God says in Isaiah 51, 8, "My righteousness will be le'olam." In Micah 4, verse 5, true believers confess, "We will walk in the name of Yahweh le'olam wa'ev," which is the hope and confession of all believers today. Verse 7 of the same chapter announces, "Yahweh will reign in Zion," spiritual Zion, according to context, "from now, wa'ev olam." Psalm 5, verse 12, English verse 11, promises that those who take refuge in Yahweh will exalt le'olam. Psalm 33, 11 states, "The counsel of Yahweh stands le'olam." David confesses in Psalm 41, 13, English verse 12, "You, Yahweh, cause me to stand before you le'olam." We have the phrase in Psalm 136, "Yahweh's grace is le'olam." Daniel 12, 2, describing the resurrection on the last day, says, "Many will rise, these to life of olam, and these to reproach, to contempt of olam." The four versions generally render olam in these verses with the sense of everlastingness. However, there are other olam verses referring to future time where it is questionable whether this word is used to convey the idea of eternity, the endless future. For example, several verses in the Old Testament dealing with God's giving the land of Canaan to the Israelites have the word olam. Genesis 13, 15 is a representative verse. God says to Abraham concerning the land of Canaan, "I will give it to you and to your seed, ad olam." All four versions render ad olam in this verse as forever. And in parallel land verses, the versions usually continue translating olam with an everlasting word. However, did Yahweh indeed give the land of Canaan to the Israelites forever as an everlasting possession? Concerning the idea that this promise was conditional, one also notes that even if Israel had remained faithful to Yahweh, the nation would not have possessed the land of Canaan forever. The Bible teaches that this present world will be destroyed on the last day and that there will be a new creation. Joshua 14, verse 9 is a similar verse. Caleb recalls what Moses had said to him 45 years earlier concerning the land of Canaan when Caleb was one of two faithful spies. So Moses swore on that day, saying, "Surely the land on which your foot has trod will be an inheritance to you and to your children, ad olam." Again, all four versions render ad olam as forever. But this translation may be questioned for the reason already stated. Many verses in the Pentateuch dealing with ceremonial laws contain olam. Exodus 12, 14 is a representative verse. On the day of the first Passover celebration, Yahweh tells the Israelites, "Now this day will be a memorial to you, and you shall celebrate it as a feast to Yahweh. Throughout your generations, you are to celebrate it as an ordinance of olam." The New American Standard, permanent ordinance. NIV, lasting ordinance. New King James, everlasting ordinance. New RSV, perpetual ordinance. The Passover, of course, was not an everlasting ordinance from the Lord. It was to be observed by the Israelites until the Messiah had come and completed his redeeming work. Here the translations have the proper nuance, except for the New King James. So also in Exodus 29, verse 9, where Yahweh says that Aaron and his sons shall have the priesthood by or for an ordinance of olam. New American Standard, perpetual statute. NIV, lasting ordinance. The New King James here has, interestingly enough, perpetual statute. New RSV, perpetual ordinance. But in Exodus 40, verse 15, Yahweh says that the anointing of Aaron and his sons shall qualify them for a priesthood of olam throughout their generations. And here the New King James Version goes back to the rendering everlasting priesthood. In Leviticus chapter 24, verse 8, see also verse 9, Yahweh gives orders to Aaron concerning the showbread and frankincense in the tabernacle. Every Sabbath day he shall set it in order before Yahweh continually on the part of the children of Israel. It is a covenant of olam. Now here the NASB has everlasting covenant. NIV has lasting covenant. New King James, everlasting covenant. New RSV, covenant forever. Olam in these verses should not be understood as indicating eternity or everlastingness, for Yahweh did not plan to have the ceremonial law last forever. There are numerous other verses in which Olam is used to indicate future time, but with limits or a termination. Exodus 21, verse 6 speaks about a Hebrew slave choosing not to go out as a free man, but to remain with his master. After the slave's ear is pierced with an awl, he will serve him, namely his master, la'olam. The New King James here has forever. The other translations have permanently or servant for life. The servant would serve his master until his death, which is not the same as forever. Deuteronomy 15, verse 17 is a parallel passage talking about the same ceremony as in the previous passage, but with the phrase, servant of Olam. It is interesting to note the change in translation given by the New American Standard and the New RSV. Both of these now have servant forever. The New King James continues with servant forever. NIV has servant for life. The background for 1 Samuel 27:12 is David fleeing from Saul, becoming a vassal of the Philistine king Achish, and deceiving Achish into believing that he, David, has been raiding his own countrymen. Achish says concerning David in verse 12, he has certainly become odious with his people, with Israel. He will be my servant of Olam. And now here the three NASV, NIV, and New King James have servant forever. The New RSV has always be my servant. Achish probably did not think that David would serve him forever, but permanently until David died. In the book of Joshua, we have the example of the people after crossing the Jordan River setting up the stones which were taken from the Jordan. Joshua explains that these stones will be for a memorial for the children of Israel, Ad Olam. Now here all four have forever. Joshua did set up the stones at Gilgal, yet it is unlikely that he wished to communicate the idea of eternity, everlastingness to his hearers, and that was the idea which they picked up. Just as we do not say that the seminary statue is an everlasting tribute to Luther, a memorial for all eternity, so Joshua was not saying that the stones would be a reminder forever. Common sense plus the analogy of faith lead us to conclude that Joshua was speaking about the distant but not the endless future. In the beginning of 1 Samuel, God grants Hannah a son, Samuel. Hannah explains to her husband that she will not go up to the tabernacle until the child is weaned. At that point, says Hannah, she will bring Samuel to the tabernacle, that he may appear before Yahweh and live there at the tabernacle, Ad Olam. And here the NASB has forever, as do the NKJV and the New RSV. The NIV has always. Hannah, a woman of keen theological insight, did not think that her son would remain at the tabernacle forever, that his stay there would be endless. He would now be staying there permanently for a long time into the future. After the temple in Jerusalem has been completed, Solomon says to Yahweh, I have indeed built a place for your dwelling, Olamim. Here all four have forever. Yahweh says to Solomon in the following chapter, I have sanctified this house which you have built to place my name there, Ad Olam. And again, all four have forever. The Jerusalem temple was not going to be an everlasting dwelling place for Yahweh, nor was he placing his name there forever for the same reason that Israel would not possess the land of Canaan forever. In 1 Chronicles 28:4, David says to an assembly in Jerusalem, Yahweh chose me to be king over Israel, la'olam. And here again, all four have forever. All four translations. David was king over Israel for a long time, about 40 years, but not forever. It should be mentioned in passing that the plural of olam is used in the same way as the singular. Likewise, there is no difference in translation when olam has the definite article. Also, Aramaic olam in portions of Daniel and Ezra has a use identical to that of its Hebrew counterpart. What then is the basic meaning of olam? There is nothing in the etymology of the word, as far as that subject can be discussed, which compels us to posit the meaning eternity, everlastingness. In a brief survey, we have seen extra-biblical Semitic counterparts of Hebrew olam used often to indicate eternity, but also limited time in the past and in the future. The key component of this paper, a review of the usage of olam in the Old Testament itself, has shown that olam occurs in various contexts to indicate time extending back into the past or into the future. This time is of different lengths and not always endless time. The common idea in all the usages of olam or its Semitic counterparts in a time context is a long time. Therefore, this paper proposes that the basic meaning of olam is long time, distant time, which would have the nuances according to context of distant past time or distant future time. This long time could be, depending on the context, endless time. However, eternity, everlastingness, is not the basic meaning of olam. Rather, this is a specialized meaning. Our versions can cause confusion and lead to wrong interpretation when they give the translations forever or everlasting in verses not talking about endless time, limitless time. For the Israelites of the Old Testament era, there would have been no problem sensing what length of time olam signified in a particular passage. An analogy is our modern usage of the phrase long time. For example, we readily understand the different lengths of time involved in these sentences. It's been a long time since dinosaurs roamed the earth. It's been a long time since the first Congress met in Washington. It's been a long time since Green Bay won the Super Bowl. Okay. Thank you for that example. The same holds true for future time references. He will be in prison for a long time. There will be unrest in the Middle East for a long time into the future. The sun is large enough to keep on burning for a long time into the future. An Israelite hearing the phrase, God has reigned from the distant past, would immediately understand that to mean eternity. Likewise, the phrase, God will reign into the distant future, would signify for him the endless future, everlastingness. I'm almost finished. Robert Girdlestone, in his book, Synonyms of the Old Testament, makes this astute observation about olam. When applied to things physical, it is used in accordance with the revealed truth that the heaven and earth shall pass away, and it is limited by this truth. When applied to God, it is used in harmony with the truth that he is essentially and absolutely existent, and that as he is the causa causarum and without beginning, so in the very nature of things, it must be held that no cause can ever put an end to his existence. When the word is applied to man's future destiny after the resurrection, we naturally give it the sense of endlessness without any limitation. James Meilenberg, in his article, The Biblical View of Time, has a similar comment. The word eternity, he's talking about olam, seldom stands alone as an independent attribute of God, but is characteristically associated with other terms. Yahweh's eternity transcends all things. In comparison with him, the heavens and the earth and the mountain fastnesses are transitory. Yet it must be remembered that precisely the same word olam is used for God as is used of these. We are not denying God's transcendence over man's time, but we are stressing the importance of careful philological exegesis. James Barr, in his monograph, Biblical Words for Time, makes this pertinent statement. The question of the extent of time involved by relating an object to olam is therefore relative to what the object is. Again, this paper had problems with the way the versions rendered olam in a number of future time contexts. Without going back over each verse cited, it suggests translations such as the following, when the future time referred to is not endless. Instead of forever, the possibilities are, depending on context, for a long time, or into the distant future, or permanently, or for life. Instead of everlasting, translate with lasting or perpetual. By way of summary and conclusion, these points can be made. The basic meaning of biblical olam, determined mainly on the basis of how it is used in the Old Testament, is long time, distant time. Point number two. The four versions examined translate olam in certain passages with an everlasting word when this is not appropriate. Also, the versions sometimes are inconsistent, rendering olam in one passage as denoting limited time, and in a parallel or similar passage as indicating time without limit or endlessness. Point number three, used with reference to God, olam designates eternity, everlastingness. The beginning of world history is me olam, Isaiah 64:3, or min ha olam, Joel 2:2. Yet God existed me'olam before he created the world. Psalm 90, verse 2. Olam in connection with God takes on special significance. He is prior to the beginning. He is without beginning. Likewise, the earth stands la'olam, Ecclesiastes 1, 4, and Yahweh dwells la'olam, Psalm 9, 8. Since the earth will, in the distant future, have an end, Yahweh, who will destroy the earth, goes beyond the end. He is endless. La'olam, used of God, actually means forever. Yahweh is the great I Am, who exists through all eternity. Related concepts are that the Messiah, who is God, is from eternity, Micah 5, 1, and those who believe in the true God will indeed praise his name forever, Psalm 44, 9. Last point. The previous point reminds us that in all our translating and exegetizing of the text, we are guided by the principle of Scripture interpreting Scripture. Also, we will constantly be looking for additional clues in the immediate context of an Olam passage, which will guide us in our rendering the word. This paper encourages all those who work with the Hebrew Bible to carry on careful study of the word Olam. In certain passages, improve the translations of our English versions. Do this for the benefit of the people you serve, for their proper understanding of Scripture. Thank you.